Parshas Veschanan contains the Aseret HaDibros, including V'lo Sanevre Achayid Shav, neither shalt thou bear false witness against thy neighbor. In Parshas Yisro, the wording is slightly different, V'lo Sanevre Achayid Shaker. Now clearly, in most cases, giving true testimony furthers the cause of justice. Not giving true testimony or giving false testimony retards the cause of justice. Similarly, for a dayan, a judge, expressing his true and considered opinion will generally further the cause of justice, while lying and expressing his incorrect opinion or claiming he does not know when he does, clearly will retard the cause of justice. There are, however, a number, a half dozen or so, interesting cases where expressing one's true opinion actually, paradoxically, will retard the cause of justice, while claiming one does not know or not saying anything will actually further the cause of justice. In this lecture, we explore these cases and we see how the post can guide one on what to do. The first case concerns a paradoxical, mysterious Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Kahana, Sanhedri Shero Kulan Lachava, a Sanhedrin judging a capital case that all rule guilty, Potrinoso, paradoxically, the defendant is acquitted. Gemara gives a reason. The Achronim struggle to give various explanations for this. Then there actually are some Rishonim. The Achronim point out there are some Rishonim who have a completely different shana of the Gemara. Some Rishonim understand that on the contrary, the Giras is not Potrin, or Potrin means we kill him immediately. We don't even wait Halanas Hadin. We kill him even faster than normal. But the normative view, the most commonly understood view, is that of the Rambam and the Yad Ramah, that Potrinoso means he is acquitted. Why is he acquitted? As we mentioned, the Achronim give all kinds of reasons. Particularly noteworthy are the comments of the Maritrius. He writes that in modern governments, we have people whose job it is to defend even the most egregious crimes, the most egregious defendants. They try to say, lo hayaz sichlor barer, the insanity defense, he didn't act out of clear mind, v'chaser deya, and all kinds of isnatzos rechokos, far-fetched defenses, v'chein rinu hayom, b'tzarfat, Britannia. Today in France and Britain, every criminal, no matter how bad he is, gets a defense lawyer who tries to save him, even if he's done hara, hayoser, gedola, the worst crime imaginable. In other places, the custom is that the judges themselves act as the defense for the defendant. They try to find any possible reason to get him off. If this Beistin cannot find any reason to acquit the defendant, then clearly, he says, they're not bekiyim, they're not expert, v'ein dinam din. And that's why we throw out their conviction. He argues similarly. That's why the Gemara says Sanhedrin has to have people who are Yodei Lataris Asheretz. They can argue that even Asheretz is tar. And the reason is because we're afraid of having unanimous verdict. So there has to always be someone who can. There has to be always be someone who can provide some kind of argument for the defense, and that way he can indeed be convicted. Not Chas V'Shalom, he says, that we're actually going to rule in favor of the one who argues Lataris Asheretz. But the defense has to have some kind of argument in his favor, and then we can convict him because we're sure that all possible defenses were exhausted. Be it as it may, that is the halacha, according to the Rambam and the Yad Ramah, that a unanimous conviction results in acquittal for the defendant in a capital case. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh and Parshas Mishpatim on the pasuk of Lo Siach Rei Rabim L'Ra'os V'Lo Sanal Riv L'Ntos Echrei Rabim L'Hatos explains the pasuk in a unique manner, different from the earlier commentators, different from Chazal. He suggests that a dayan on a capital case will often have a dilemma. Let's say he knows that all the other dayanim are ready to rule guilty, and he feels that the defendant is guilty too. But he knows that if he expresses his true opinion, there'll be a unanimous verdict for guilty, and that will result in acquittal. Let's say vice versa. Let's say he believes that the defendant is actually innocent. He knows that if he rules innocent, he'll be outvoted, and an innocent man will be killed. In either of these two cases, is it appropriate for him to flip his vote in order to achieve the desired outcome? In the first case, where he believes the defendant is guilty and he wants to get him executed, perhaps he should deliberately vote innocent in order to avoid the unanimous guilty verdict, which will result in acquittal. In the latter case, where he believes the man is innocent, in order to save an innocent man's life, he should perversely rule guilty in order to trigger the unanimous guilty verdict, which will result in the innocent man's acquittal. Should he do that? The Aruch Chaim, through an intricate reading of the Psukim, says no. It's not your job. Tam mishpat zeh letzad ki Hashem yoshim mesivas hadayanim. God sits in the council of dayanim. Hu yishpat b'fiyem. He will cause them to say the right thing. It's not your job to be an oibra chacham. It's not your job to play games like this to get the right thing to happen. You simply express your true considered belief and let God take care of the rest. I don't know of any dissenting view. This is not brought in Shulchan Aruch because we don't do capital cases. Nevertheless, this is the celebrated opinion of the Aruch Chaim that in capital cases, one must vote his conscience, what he truly believes, regardless of whether that will result in the desired outcome, even if he has a way of perverting his opinion and gaining what he believes is the desired outcome. That is not his job. He simply is supposed to vote exactly as he believes and let God take care of the rest. Another case concerns a witness who knows that his fellow witness, the one who he'll be testifying with, is a Rasha. The Gemara in Shavuos, the beginning of the third parak, brings numerous examples of courses of conduct which are prohibited from Midrash Sheker Tirchak. Incidentally, it is clear from the Sugya, these are not things which constitute out-and-out Sheker, absolute false witness, like the Saras HaDibros. The Gemara, one of them, the Gemara actually asks, "Ha Midrash Sheker Tirchak Nafka Havadesh Guri Kamashaker, Chwan Amar Lassanav Rachei Shaker." We're not interested here in listing things which are out-and-out textbook cases of false witness. We're listing things which are not technically false, but which are nevertheless prohibited under the general rubric of Midrash Sheker Tirchak, of keeping far away from falsehood. One of them is, Minayin L'dayin Sheyodei L'chaveru Shu Gazlan, a dayin who knows that his co-judge, another judge on the same panel, is a gazlan, a thief, and therefore invalid to be a dayin. V'chein Eid Sheyodei B'chaveru Shu Gazlan, a witness who knows that his fellow witness is a gazlan, also invalid as a witness. Minayin Shelo Yitztarefimo, how do we know that he shall not join him? Talmud Lomar Midrash Sheker Tirchak. This is included in the exhortation to keep far away from Sheker. And this is brought in the Shulchan Aruch and all the poskim. The Shach doesn't understand this din. The Shach just intellectually cannot wrap his head around this din. Tzarechi in Gadol B'din Zeh, Shu Rachuk Misvara. This is just remote from logic. This is just hard to understand. Why? She Yodea She'inyan Emes. He knows the facts are true. He knows what both witnesses will be testifying are the correct events that actually occurred. V'lo yod b'shvil sheshenim pasul. He's not going to testify because he knows the other one is technically invalid, but the story's true, and they both actually saw it. So first he says, if not for the explanations of the Rishonim, Rashi, and the Rambam, he would have a different shot of the Gemara. He would explain that the Gemara means he shouldn't deliberately go and be a witness, watch the event along with the pasul, because he knows the pasul has no business testifying. So he shouldn't see. But if he does see, then there's nothing wrong with testifying. This pshat is actually adopted by the Chavos Yair in the context of his discussion of the sugya, which we shall return to shortly. He suggests that lo yitztaref imo lias etzel adavar le'ed alachtam shtar. He shouldn't sign a document in advance with someone he knows is not technically kosher for a witness. But once he saw it, he can testify. But the Shach is not happy with this because the Rishonim don't explain the Gemara like this. The Rishonim say it means testifying in Beis Din, not simply that he shouldn't witness the events initially. The Shach then has a second shot that we're talking about what in the yeshiva world we call Eidus L'Kiyume. For example, Kiddushin, where if there are not two valid witnesses, even if the events actually occurred, even if the groom gave the bride the ring, she's still not married because you need two witnesses. Eidus L'Kiyume. Or another example the Shach gives, witnesses on a sale of real estate that there is no lien on Meshubadim, on property that is sold, unless there are two witnesses. Even if we know to everyone's satisfaction that the transaction initially occurred, the loan did take place, if there aren't two valid witnesses, that's a technical requirement, then there is no lien on Meshubadim. So maybe that's what the Gemara means, the Shach says, that if you know that the other witness is not valid, then even though the events are true, but legally it doesn't make a difference. Halachically, since there were not two valid witnesses, the specific halachic consequences don't occur, and therefore you can't testify. But it doesn't mean in a general case that you shouldn't testify with the pasul. Oh, finally the Shach gets to a third pshat. He says, we can learn the Gemara, we can take the Gemara at face value. V'yesh l'karev adin al asvara. We can try to rationalize this halacha. We can invoke another famous technicality. Even when there are three Eidim, if one of them is Karav Apostle, but you still have two valid ones, just because one is Apostle, nevertheless, there's a technical halacha that we throw out the entire testimony. So here too, the Shach says, even though Ha'inyan Emes, it's Xeris Akasiv, it's a technicality, that as long as one of them is Apostle, Nimsa Echad Karav Apostle, Idusim Betela, and therefore we discard their entire testimony. This is somewhat hard to understand. The Achronim ask numerous technical questions, including a basic question that the Shach hasn't really accomplished anything. The Urim V'Tumim says, Im kol zeh lo hoil. What has he gained? Sof kol sof, it's a technicality. He knows the events are true. and he knows that if he doesn't testify, an injustice will occur, a miscarriage of justice will transpire. So why shouldn't he testify? Again, it's a technicality. What's the difference if the technicality is that you don't have two Edim? What's the difference if the technicality is that one of the Edim is possible? The whole thing is possible. But the bottom line is, if you don't testify, a miscarriage of justice will occur, and the events are actually true. So again, why shouldn't you testify? Additionally, the Urim V'Tumim and other Achronim argue that the Shach's invocation of the rule, the other technicality of Nimtza Karav Apostle Dusan Batela, Nimtza Echer Mehem Karav Apostle, the entire Edus, is invalidated. That itself may not apply in many cases for various technical reasons, which are beyond the scope of this lecture. But in any event, the Achronim are not satisfied with this explanation of the Shach. So the Urim V'Tumim says that he doesn't need any explanations. He doesn't need the Shach's elaborate technical rationalization. He thinks that the din is perfectly reasonable, taken at face value. Afilu sha'edus emes, even if the testimony, the account they are going to assert, is perfectly true. Mikomach ma'ideha beistin motzin mamon al piyed echad. Beistin is going to execute the ruling, and there aren't two valid witnesses. The lamdanim have all kinds of fancy explanations here, that beistin, Reb Shimon, and others, beistin has a koach to create a psak din, and they don't have that koach without witnesses. Be that as it may, the Urim V'Tumim says the basic idea that there is that this itself, this is a fundamental principle. There's an objection to causing Beistin to do something, even if the underlying events are true, even if the account is true. If Beistin will not be acting procedurally correctly, even though as far as they know they are, because they think that the two Edim are Ksherim, but if you know that there's a procedural deficiency here, that itself is something you're not allowed to do. You can't be Gurim LeBeistin, you can't cause Beistin to be motzi money based on Edim when there aren't really two Edim. And he winds up, again, similar to the language of the Arachayim, Ein lanu lasis tachbulas resha. It's not our job to engage in villainous stratagems. Vashem lo tziva. That is not what God commands. V'kach gzeres hamelach. This is gzeres hamelachu. V'ein lanu lahar l'chapes b'taimim. It's not our job to try to rationalize it, to second guess it, to find reasons. That's what the Torah said, period. We don't want Beistin to act without proper procedural foundation, even if the events are true. So he doesn't offer that much of an explanation unless you bring in Rav Shimon and the Lamdas. But he says, kacha, that's the din. The halacha is that we are not allowed to cause Beistin to act if there will not be proper witnesses. So this is discussing the case of a witness who knows that his fellow witness is a Rasha. What's the halacha if the witness knows he himself is a Rasha? Or perhaps he himself is, or other kinds of psulim, a karov, a relative, or an agab edus, an interested party. What's the halacha? Beistin doesn't know he's a Rasha. Is he allowed to be made or not? Now, on the surface, this is a perfectly ridiculous question. If he can't even join a Rasha, how on earth can anyone contemplate that he can give testimony if he himself is a Rasha? How can that possibly be better? Nevertheless, surprisingly, the Achronim are quite free of a consensus on this point. This is first raised by the Chavos Yair in the Hashmatas to his Tshuvas. Tzarachian, he says, if Reuven asks Levi to testify, and it's true, the testimony he wants him to testify in Beistin is perfectly correct, but he knows that he has a psul, either kurva or negia, an interest, or avera, he's a rasha. Beistin doesn't know. Is he allowed to be made? So we are going to focus on the two questions of avera and negia. So regarding avera particularly, the Chavos Yair says he's in a difficult dilemma. What should he do? Even if he announces, he tells Beistin, look, I would love to testify, but I can't because I'm a Rasha. Beistin will not listen because there is a famous rule, Ena D'Meis Matzno Rasha, self-incrimination. Even if you try to self-incriminate under halacha, you can't. Beistin dismisses your allegation against yourself. So what's he supposed to do? So now the Chavos Yair makes the obvious elephant in the room that we mentioned before. How on earth can you argue that he's supposed to testify? He can't even testify when his co-witness is a Rasha, certainly when he's a Rasha. Midrash Sheker Tirchak, Kal V'Chomer Ba'atzmo. So he says, as we mentioned earlier, he suggests the Pshat of the Shach. He doesn't mention the Shach, but he says, perhaps all the Gemara means is Lo Yitzaref Imo Lios Eitz L'Adavar. He shouldn't view the events in the first place. He shouldn't sign on the document. And that's a Kal V'Chomer, indeed. He himself, if he's a Rasha, certainly shouldn't sign on the document, even if he knows he'll get away with it. But if he already saw, then perhaps he should testify. So the Chavos Yair, as quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva, doesn't seem very sure about this. He says Tzarachi, and he doesn't seem to have a clear resolution. There are, for some reason, some Achronim who cite the Chavos Yair as saying he should not testify. The Ktzos HaChoshen, the Rikiv Eger, I don't understand where they get that from. The Chavos Yair seems to be in doubt. The Urim V'Tumim cites the Chavos Yair, and he distinguishes between the various kinds of psulim. If he's a Karov, he certainly should not testify, because he's technically invalid no matter what. If, however, the issue is Rishus, he's done an Avera, since nobody knows, and Anadim Nifsal Piatmo, as the Chavos Yair said, we have the rule of Anadim Esim Atmo Rasha, then on the contrary, he should come to Beis Din, Lama Lo Yad. Why should he not testify? The Urim V'Tumim can't think of any reason why he shouldn't testify. Similarly, he says, if he's an Ageba Dover, an interested party, but Beis Din doesn't realize that, again, both these cases, he says, both the Rasha and the Ageba Dover, these are not technical Xeris Akasivs like Krovim. These are both Rishus and interest, are both issues that we doubt his veracity. We are afraid he will be Meshaker. So he knows he's telling the truth. The whole problem is Yod Sheker, Mkein, Hushi Yodea Ba'atma Shemesito. He knows that he's telling the absolute truth. Lama Lo Yod. Again, why should he not testify? So the Urim V'Tumim is extremely difficult to understand. He himself, the Chavos Yair's question, again, he himself, regarding the din of testifying alongside a Rasha, he himself rejected what the Shach said, that we don't understand this din is Rachman Esfer. He said, on the contrary, it's Xeris HaMelech, Ein Lan Al-Harher, Ein Lan Al-Chapes Taimim, Kach Xeris HaMelech, No Tachbulos Resha. He had no problem accepting that at face value, that even if your partner is a Rasha, and you know perfectly well that the story is true, you still shouldn't testify. So how on earth can he say that when it comes to you yourself being a Rasha, you should testify? And there's no problem because the whole problem is Chashash Sheker, we're afraid you're lying and you know you're telling the truth. How on earth can you be better than your friend? If your friend is a Rasha and you're not a Rasha, you still can't testify. How on earth can he allow a Rasha himself to testify? As we mentioned, the Chavos Yair himself asked this question, and his only solution is to say like the Shach, to reject the simple reading of the Gemara. But the Urim V'Tumim is absolutely insistent that the Gemara should be taken at face value, and Ein Lanu Lasach Bulas Resha, Xeris Melech, Ein Lanu Laharher, Ein Lanu Lachapes Taimim. And all of a sudden, when it comes to the Rasha himself testifying, he says, why not? He knows he's telling the truth. This is a Pliat Tzuma raised by some of the later Achronim. I have no idea how to reconcile this. Additionally, even putting aside the Tumim's own position earlier, even if somebody would reject the earlier Tumim like the Chavos Yair does, it's still not so simple. The Urim V'Tumim's claim that the entire psul of a Rasha is simply because we doubt his veracity, we're afraid he's going to lie, that itself is a celebrated debate raging among the Achronim, a highly contentious point. There are many Achronim who say that it's actually Xeris HaKasuv, like Karov. There are actually some Achronim who say both Dinim are true. There's Xeris HaKasuv as well as Echashah Sheker. Indeed, the Yeshua is Yisrael. Rabbi Yeshua of Kutna, indeed, rejects the Urim V'Tumim for this very reason. He says, even if the Tumim is right, that there is a Chashash Sheker, there's also a Xeris HaKasuv. So again, certainly he says, the Rasha should not testify. The Nesivus makes a rather interesting and difficult to understand compromise. The Nesivus first cites the Tumim, that if he knows he's a Rasha, no problem, he says, he should testify, even though he knows he's a Rasha, because as long as he knows that the testimony is true, no problem. A Karov, he agrees to the Tumim, also should not testify, because he's Xeris HaKasuv, he's Pasul. But a Rasha, as long as he knows what he's saying is true, even though he agreed to the other Tumim that it's Xeris Melech, and he rejected the Shach, again, here he has no problem accepting the Tumim's position here, that it's only a Chashash Sheker, and as long as he knows he's telling the truth, just like the Tumim again, the same stira we have in the Tumim we have in the Nesivus, here he has no problem saying the Rasha can and should testify. However, when it comes to Nogeya B'davar, here he deviates, diverges from the Tumim. Here he says, "Im yodea ba'atmashu nogeya," he's an interested party, lo yod. Then he should not testify. This is like some of those examples in Shavuos HaDayanim that we discussed earlier, Midrash Sheker Terchak. So this again seems to be a pliat Tumim. The Tumim said that we treat nogeya and Rasha the same. They're both chashash sheker, and as long as you know you're telling the truth, that's fine. Midrash Sheker Terchak, how does he deal with that? I don't know. That's a steer in the Tumim. But at least he treats Rasha and Nogeya the same way. The Nesivus is a Pliat Tumim. Rasha, he agrees to the Tumim. He calls it only a Chashash Sheker, and why not testify? Even though, as we mentioned, many Achronim say it's Xeris HaKasuv. Nogeya B'davar, which is almost certainly simply a Chashash Sheker, here he's worried about Midrash Sheker Terchak. And what on earth happened to Midrash Sheker Terchak when it comes to Rasha? On the contrary, the Gemaras he brings in Shavuos HaDayanim are talking about Rasha. It says, Yedeh b'chaverushu Rasha, shouldn't be mitzaref. So when it comes to Rasha, he for some reason thinks it's not analogous to the Gemaras in Shavuos HaDayanim, even though that itself is what the Gemara was talking about. When it comes to Nogeya B'davar, then he diverges from the Tumim. Then he says that since you know that you're Nogeya B'davar, even though Basin doesn't know, then we worry about Midrash Sheker Terchak. Very hard to understand why this should be. third case, where the post can discuss lying in order to achieve justice rather than thwart justice, occurs with regard to a judge who wants to deliberately and falsely claim he does not know the answer, does not know the correct ruling, rather, even though he actually does and is perfectly capable of expressing his opinion. Now, why would he do that? So this Shaila begins with the Tshuvas Beis Yaakov of Zeismer. There were three dayanim, two found in favor of one litigant, one of them dissented. Now, he knew if he simply expressed his dissent, the basic rule based on his majoritarian, he is outvoted, the halacha follows the rov, and the litigant he believes is correct loses. So what can he do? So he has a brilliant idea. He'll make a tachbula, that word tachbula again, stratagem, and he'll say any idea. What happens if a judge says any idea? We add two more dayanim. So there's hope. He can keep the case alive. He'll bring a new dayanim. Maybe he'll convince them to agree with him. Maybe they'll convince other dayanim. Anything's possible. As long as he can keep the case alive and avoid closing it and issuing a final verdict, that's certainly to the benefit of justice. Is he allowed to do this? So the Beis Yaakov says that he is not, but not for the obvious reason that this is Sheker, Midrash Sheker Terchak. You can't lie even for a good cause. As the Ben Ishchai points out in the Rav Palm, that's not the reason he gives. He gives a different reason. He brings an obscure Gemara about Sota. The Gemara is discussing whether Sota initially needs a Beis Din of 3 or 23. On the one hand, it's a civil case. She's going to lose her ksuva. On the other hand, it can eventually result in a capital case. She can be executed. So the Gemara brings the question of laws. That if we start with 3, there can be laws. If we have to add Dayanim, that may result in laws. Tosus explains the laws is people will say, oh, they're adding Dayanim. The first ones were incompetent. They couldn't solve the matter on their own. They didn't know how to rule. Even though the real reason is because capital cases need more Dayanim, there'll be a laws. People will unjustly suspect the initial Dayanim of incompetence, of ignorance. So Beis Yaakov says, so you see that adding Dayanim triggers aspersions of laws, can trigger an aspersion of laws on other Dayanim. So you have no right to say any Adea, because even if you're willing to say any Adea, the biggest laws will be on you, because you're the one who said any Adea. But nevertheless, it's unfair to your colleagues, because they do know, and there'll be an unfair laws against them, and that's why you shouldn't say that you don't know, because it's unfair to your colleagues. The Birkei Yosef agrees to the Beis Yaakov. He has a lengthy pilpul on this, and he ultimately is not convinced by the argument of laws. He ultimately rules like the Beis Yaakov, but for the more basic reason that it's a sheker. He argues partly based on that sugya in Shavuos, that Midrash Sheker Terchak includes many things which, even if they're in the service of justice, are still included under the rubric of Midrash Sheker Terchak. Additionally, he brings one other precedent, one other interesting model for this idea. And this is similar to the explanation of the Urim Batumim, that we don't make tachbulas, even if it's for a good cause, even if you know the story is true. Imam Bava Kama says that if there's a single witness, an Eid Echad, who knows that Reuven owes Shimon money, and the case ends up in a non-Jewish court, Reuven is not allowed to testify. Because even though the secular court will enforce what he says, and he knows it's true, so the Reuven does owe Shimon the money, so they'll be perfectly just. Nevertheless, since Al-Pi Din Torah, Eid Echad is not believed. All Eid Echad can do is to require the defendant, Shimon, the Reuven, to take a shvua. And in the secular courts, they will be motzi the money. They will actually force Reuven to pay. That's considered somehow a miscarriage of justice. That's not allowed. We put him in cheirim. And there's a great deal of literature in the Achronim how to understand the parameters of this Gemara and the rationale behind it. But some Achronim say, including the Maritz Elon, adopted by the Chida here in the Birkei Yosef, some Achronim say that following the Maritz Elon, that even though the halacha is true, and even though if he'd be in Beis Din, he would take a false oath, you know that he owes the money, and you know that in Beis Din he would swear falsely, and that would be both a shvua sheker and a miscarriage of justice. And here, all you're doing is causing Shimon, the rightful owner of the money, to get what's his. Nevertheless, again, it's not your job to make tachbulas. You have no right to do this. Since the court will be acting against what the Torah considered due process, even though the ultimate goal is true, the ultimate result will be correct, you're not allowed to do this. So here, too, the Birkei Yosef says, you're not allowed to say any adea, because that's a procedural violation. That's a sheker and a procedural violation. It's a Kal V'chomer, he says. Over there, what you're saying is perfectly true. You're saying Reuven owes Shimon the money. That's still considered a procedural violation because the court, the secular court, will be acting in a way that the Torah considers procedurally incorrect. Kol Shekein here, where you're actually saying something which is not true, you're saying... Kol Shekein here, where you're saying something which is actually not true, you have no right to do that, And Hashem will worry about the taking care of what's his. You, not your job. Again, chiyuva ramile legalis daito. Your job is to say what you know. If you know, then say what you know. Say what you believe. Uchitari yase, and you do what you're supposed to do. It's not your job in this case to save the world. There is a Shvus Yaakov. The Shvus Yaakov disagrees. The Shvus Yaakov, to begin with, was talking about a grossly incompetent, if not actually villainous, Beis Din. The Shvus Yaakov correspondent said that he was sitting together with Shnei Yoshvei Kronos, two ignorant people, incompetent people, Dlogmiri, Vlosviri, they don't know anything, they don't understand things, and they outvoted him, and he had no choice. So first he said he lost the case, he had a discussion whether he was bound to accept their ruling. Then he followed up in the next tshuva to the Shvus Yaakov. He says he has one solution, he had or has one solution to avoid this miscarriage of justice, and that is, he could say, any adah, and that will trigger the addition of two more dayanim, and the din will go out, the din will emerge, lamito. Is that correct or not? So the Shvus Yaakov says, yes, that is absolutely correct. He says, that's fine. It's l'shem shemayim, l'hoti adin lamito, through Hosafas Dayanim, through adding more Dayanim, even though it's a falsity, he says. Makes an interesting argument. He says, we have a famous principle, Mutter L'shana Zipnei HaShalom. You're allowed to lie for the sake of peace. V'dina Shlomahu. Dina itself is considered peace. D'chsiv emes mishpat shalom shiftu b'sharechem. So you see that mishpat is a form of peace. V'alzeh chayotze b'zeh amru. That's what Chazal mean when they say, L'mod L'shan chalamar in yadeh. It's good to get into the practice of saying, I don't know. I don't know is a good thing to say. Kol zeh nirah li pashut. I think this is obvious, self-evident. However, he says, I have seen the Beis Yaakov, who seems to say differently. Kol dvar aveinu machrachim. I disagree with him. He's wrong. He argues that the svara of lies does not apply. He, on the contrary, he says, it's better to prevent a miscarriage of justice than to worry about the temporal olam hazeh, honor of the Rishonim. It's covered hamaduma, false honor. Yoser tov delevish b'hayalma, better they should be shamed in this world, may onesh shalom haba, they suffer in the world to come. And on the contrary, he says, a dying telek lies ba'atzmo, he's the one who's saying he doesn't know. He's not really casting aspersions on them. He's saying any adah. Zocher latov, there's no laz, that's the correct thing to do. The Shvus Yaakov is accepted by many other achronim, the Rambam Tumim, the Nesivos, and Birkei Yosef ultimately accept the Shvus Yaakov. Even though, as we mentioned, the Birkei Yosef accepts the Beis Yaakov too. So he says that the truth is the Beis Yaakov and the Shvus Yaakov were talking about very different cases. The Beis Yaakov was talking about an ordinary Beis Din, competent, qualified Dayanim. You disagree with them, but they're not doing anything wrong. They're expressing their opinion. There he says it's wrong to falsify your opinion. The process there is legitimate, so you should simply express your own opinion. You do what you have to do. That's the din. Three competent dayanim followed the rules. That's how it came out. That's not your problem. In the case of the Shvus Yaakov, where they emphasized over and over, they were Amei Haaretz, they were Kesher Rishayim, they were Yoshvei Kronos. That's not due process. That's just Kilkel. That's just Dainu de Magista. Those are incompetent, unqualified, corrupt dayanim. That's nothing. There he says the Shvus Yaakov is absolutely correct that you should. It's indeed a mitzvah to rectify the miscarriage by doing this tachbula, by claiming you don't know, in order to do whatever you can to trigger the correct din, ultimately, so that the correct din should ultimately emerge. Similarly, the Ben Ishchai and the Rav Pa'alim also says that the Shvus Yaakov was talking specifically about that case where his colleagues were Yoshvei Kronos. They were not Chachamim, they were not Ruyim Ladin, they may not have been Rishayim, even though he uses the word Rasha, the Shvus Yaakov correspondent, but they were completely unqualified, ignorant, and incompetent. Ulamare Nehem, they just judge from their gut. Matim Akalkalosim, Makalkalim Shuris Adin. That's why it was permitted to say a falsehood in order to get the true din. That's different from the case of the Beis Yaakov. And he therefore concludes also that in the case of the Shvus Yaakov, where the judges are indeed corrupt, it is correct, it is mutter, brings numerous rayas, it is mutter to L'hamra davar el mitaso, to say a falsehood, to say you don't know, in order to hopefully attain, ultimately, the correct din. Pesach Tshuva, though, and the Abiyah Omer of Avadia, both point out that it seems completely untenable to try to reconcile the Beis Yaakov and the Shvus Yaakov as the Ben Ishchai and the Chidah do. They try to argue that the Beis Yaakov was talking specifically about a case of upright, legitimate Dayanim, and the Shvus Yaakov was talking about corrupt, unqualified dayanim, they point out you can't say that because the Shvus Yaakov, after he expresses his view that it's a mitzvah to say any adah to achieve the just outcome, he says, what about the Beis Yaakov, who says, not like this, the Beis Yaakov is wrong. He clearly saw the Beis Yaakov as a contradiction to his own opinion and rejected the Beis Yaakov. So it's clearly untenable as a matter of explaining the Shvus Yaakov's own view to claim that he was in agreement with the Beis Yaakov, and he was limiting his case to that of the corrupt Dayanim. Clearly, by the fact that he rejected the ruling of the Beis Yaakov, it seems almost explicit that he felt that that even in the case of the Beis Yaakov, where the judges were not necessarily Yoshvei Kronos, unless for some reason he assumed they were, but there's no indication of the Tshuva of the Beis Yaakov to that effect, he clearly seems to assume that even if the judges are legitimate and decent, still it is a mitzvah to say any adah, to falsely assert any adah, if that will achieve ultimate justice. And again, better that the dayanim should be humiliated in Olam Hazeh than they should suffer an onesh for ruling incorrectly in Olam Haba. The Pesachei Tshuva says that this is clear from other achronim, the Tumim and the Nesivos, who simply bring the Shvus Yaakov, they summarize it, and they don't mention anything about Yoshvei Kronos. They seem to indicate that his rule is not dependent on the fact that the dayanim are unqualified. In any event, it is permitted and appropriate to falsely say any adah. The Aruch HaShulchan also accepts the ruling of the Shvus Yaakov. He says, even though a dayan certainly should not say any adah when he's simply doing it to pervert the din, to favor one litigant, to give him a second chance, however, he says, if he sees that the Shnayim are Ma'avsim HaDin, if two, again, it's not entirely clear whether Yoshvei Kronos or not, but if he sees that the din is incorrect, and he'll simply be outvoted, and by saying any adah, he can salvage, he can avoid Ivus HaDin, mitzvah of Lasas Kain. And the Abiya Omer has a lengthy tshuva. Again, he rejects this idea of reconciling the Beis Yaakov with the Shvus Yaakov. His conclusion is, ultimately though, his final conclusion is really like the Ben Ish Chai, that we distinguish between the case whether the Dayanim are legitimate or not. Whatever the Shvus Yaakov and the Beis Yaakov personally held, after a lengthy analysis, he says that while normally, if the process is legitimate, we say, Ein Eitza v'Ein Tvuna l'Stalak min Adin b'Tanis Yen Yedea. Again, you can't make Chachmas if the process is legitimate. But if they're Yoshvei Kronos, then you have the right to tell them, you should listen to me, even though you're two and I'm one, but I know what I'm doing and you don't, and you should be deferring to me. And if they don't listen, then indeed he has the right to say any adah, like the Svara of the earlier Achronim. He concludes with a personal anecdote. He says his judicial colleagues, he says, were Tzas Talmidei Chachamim. By Rav Avadia standards, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but wherever they were, he felt they were somewhat Talmidei Chachamim. Once, he says, they had a disagreement. His two colleagues were against him. They were following a position they found in a sefer of some achron. And I myself, he says, I rebutted the position of that achron, but they wouldn't listen to me for whatever reason. So I wasn't sure what to do, he says. Should I say any adah to get more dayanim, like the Shvus Yaakov and the Rav Pa'alim? Or do we say, since they are, after all, tzas talmidei chachamim, Rav Avadia grudgingly admits they were somewhat talmidei chachamim, and they did find their position in the sefer, they weren't just making it up out of thin air. Maybe I'm not allowed to say any adah. Rav Avadia's position is that if the process is legitimate, you cannot say any adah. So is this called, he says, these tzas talmidei chachamim against me? That's the implication. Now it's the shaila, is this called a legitimate process, that even though they're not on my level, they have the right to overrule me, they did find an achron, and they are somewhat learned? Or do you say, I guess his other position was that he was so much greater than them that they should have been listening to him, they should have been deferring to him, he had arguments on his behalf, so he wasn't sure what to do. At the end of the day, he says, he chose not to say any adah, and he was indeed overruled, he was outvoted. But the reason he didn't say any adah, he gives a new reason. He says, Ba'astra Hadain, in this land, I assume it was Egypt at the time, Eina Er Shel Chachamim, V'Shel Sofrim, it's not a city of sages, of scribes. So therefore, there's no point in saying any adah, he says, because Gamim Yosifu Beis Dayanim B'Makomi, even if they would add two Dayanim, Karav Levadai, it's nearly certain that they would rule with his opponents anyway. Why? Because they saw it explicit on a sefer. And he quotes another sefer, the Makom Shmuel, who says that some lomdim, whenever they see in a sefer, they instantly defer, lo yozes midvarav. They follow the Rambam, who derisively says in the Maror Nevuchim that when people see something inscribed in a book, tigdal emunasobo, they place great belief in it. Anochi, levavi, lokin, adama. I don't follow that. I don't think that way. He says, yeshel chapit makom sheyodim agas. Every person must judge for himself. Even our Rav Avadia, quite ironic, he's the posik of our generation who's most famous for amassing incredible, mind-boggling quantities of erudition. Nevertheless, here Rav Avadia says that people can go too far. The people, his colleagues, his judicial colleagues in Egypt, were going too far. They were blindly deferring to whatever they found in Svarim, even in this particular case where Rav Avadia felt he had conclusively refuted what the Sefer said, and therefore he felt there'd be no point in taking it back because it wouldn't accomplish anything, but ultimately he does not really resolve the underlying question in the case where it was he, the great Rav Avadia, against two lesser colleagues, but who were Talmidei Chachamim and who did find their position in the Sefer. Is that considered a legitimate process where one should not say any adah, or is that considered an illegitimate outcome where he should say any adah?